here who was complaining about the one of the mics being too icky to kiss. And I explained to her she had to kiss the mic in order to really speak up loudly enough to be heard. So that was...
Well, that's not necessarily true, Robert. See, it's your own lack of technical knowledge and your own fault for not seeking out such said knowledge after... How long have you been doing a show?
15 years.
15 years.
Well, not quite that long.
It might as well be. You do two shows a week. We've been on for 7.5, so that's almost... That's like 15 years worth of weekly programming.
Exactly, but not weekly programming.
Yes, yes. Well, weak in the technical skills, anyway.
That's for sure.
But, of course, content notwithstanding.
Yes.
Anyway, thank you for clarifying that.
Sure,
and I appreciate you not trashing me.
Certainly not.
When I'm not even tuned in. Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Stay tuned. Well, now it's obviously time to trash the V-Man, but we'll wait briefly on that until we can really get some choice criticisms here. Free Radio Santa Cruz is the number to call here at 427-3772 if you wish to trash anybody. Hey, we're ready. The garbage cans are available. With me again in the studio is Chris Fredrickson. Chris, you are you have been kind of nosing around the courts, or holding your nose around the courts, trying to deal with the Camp Paradise 3 case, right?
Yes.
And you also showed up at the Right to Sleep Summit and gave a sort of a seminar chat with a relatively large number of people on the, well, it started out as the necessity defense and became a broader seminar. But you have in your hands the infamous Irwin Joseph decision on Camp Paradise. There were actually, I guess, 10 of them. They got reduced to 8, and they got cut down to 4. Now there are 3 of them.
3 left.
3 left, and
yes.
Then there were 3.
And then there were 3.
They were, of course, engaged in criminal camping at along the river way back on August 3rd.
When, yes,
of course,
we all were.
They had, yeah, and you were there.
They
too.
Let me sleep.
And you were sleeping there. You actually came to them with an alcohol problem, and you were able to recover. Now you're back. You got your legal credentials, and you're kind of you're a success story. And there weren't even an appropriate social service. What do you mean by getting help from people who aren't officially registered with the state to do this kind of thing?
Well, they were there. They were what I needed at the time.
Sounds
safety from the streets. That was the only safety that I found on the streets.
And a lot of people found that when Camp Paradise actually was an open camp to the extent that people could come and be a part of it, at least briefly.
Right.
And then if they agreed to the rules for a longer period of time. Now, as I've mentioned, there's some apparently potential turnover in leadership there in Camp Paradise. We hope to hear more from the camp if there are any calls that we can get. And we'll happily have clearer information on that when we get when we come back on Thursday. Looks like we're delaying.
One of us will, anyway.
Somebody will have more. Yes. Well, you're welcome to come to the show, of course, Chris. We always use a co-host and some gender balance. Always a good thing. But you are an attorney for you. You weren't an attorney when this case came to trial. I mean, you weren't an attorney actually for this case. But since then, Paul Sanford and I guess an attorney from Monterey were covering the case.
Correct.
And did, I think, a very good job.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Joseph did his usual duck and cover number as a member of the local political establishment, not wishing to offend the mayor. I guess it was Mayor Fitzmaurice at that time, the Board of Supervisors, Queen Pin Marty Wormhout, who knows, the head of the court system. I don't know if it was Kelly or Attic or Yance, who knows. But in any case, the case was tried on the necessity defense. That is to say, we did the crime, but we shouldn't do the time because the crime is not really a crime when there's a larger, a greater evil. You want to explain that?
It's an old defense. It's an old criminal defense, and it's basically a defense of justification. That yes, we did the crime, but we have a perfectly good justification for doing it, and that therefore we are not culpable. And in many states, the necessity defense has been codified. For some reason, in California, it's not, which is unusual. But we still use the common law necessity defense. And yes, we did a workshop at the summit, which was an interesting experience because one of the things that I had forgotten going into the workshop is that people generally don't like to be around lawyers very long.
Damn right, man. Get out of the studio. We're getting tired of this.
So, but it was a very good experience for people who were from how many states? Three or four different states, at least.
At least Washington, Oregon, and California. We tried to get somebody from Nevada, but I don't think they showed up. And Alaska called in, but never made it.
Okay. Well, we had, the basic thing that people wanted to know was what it was. And I can give you those six elements very quickly because people can use those elements in finding basic camping tickets. It's not available just to camping tickets. It's a basic criminal defense to any crime. But we, of course, are most interested in camping tickets or trespass tickets, which are becoming very prevalent again.
And isn't it true, Chris, that it's particularly available in camping cases because where the judge can deny even the right to put it on in other cases, the ICORN decision at the state level has ruled that if there's a camping case, the judge has to allow it to be presented.
Pretty much, yes.
Is that accurate?
I mean, there are a few threshold items that have to be passed, but that is pretty much the case. ICORN gave us a lot of freedom, and we thought we were going to be dancing in the streets, pretty much defeating every camping ticket that came along afterwards. That was obviously not the case, although there have been some great victories since then. Camp Paradise not being one of them.
But haven't most camping tickets been defeated? That's what I understand. In Santa Barbara, in Albany, I haven't heard of a case where the necessity defense failed on a camping ticket except in Santa Cruz.
Except
have you?
In Santa Cruz. Are you talking about camping ground cases or are you talking about individual cases?
I'm saying, is there any case of someone tried under a camping law or a sleeping ban, a narrower sleeping ban where, actually a broader sleeping ban, where they have tried, they said, we had to do this because we did it to avert a greater evil, the necessity
right.
defense, but they have failed, other than in Santa Cruz, where Commissioner Joseph gave this rather unpersuasive opinion last November.
Disgusting opinion.
Yes.
We have not heard of any defeats, but we have yet to hear from the Isla Vista folks, you know, who are going to be going to court, unfortunately, shortly, because their camping ban has just been put into place. That's a whole other story. So we don't know what can be done for them down there. Now, Glenn Mauer has been using it in RV cases. And
Santa
Barbara, and using it successfully on the one prong, which is the alternative means.
And Attorney Sternberg and his associate used it in Albany in the camping cases on the, the spit where they were moved away in 1999.
Right. And that was a different set of circumstances as well because it was, as I understand it, there was much more of an immediate emergency happening than Commissioner Joseph chose to see. He chose to see Camp Paradise as sort of a comfortable, almost a recreational sort of community
a
with
home
a
away
gener-
from homeless.
Yes, exactly, with a generator and a kitchen. And how could we possibly be in an emergency situation?
Well, actually, Albany was quite apposite, was quite similar, was quite on target because Albany was a settlement that had been set up essentially in a kind of an area that nobody else wanted, though beautiful. The landfill area.
Right by in fact, people probably remember passing it.
Right.
On the way to the bridge.
When you up there, and you know, Albany is the little town right next to Berkeley, between Berkeley and Oakland.
But the circumstances became somewhat emergent because the police suddenly decided to crack down, as I understand it.
Right. The police.
They passed a quick camping ban.
They passed a camping ban. The police began enforcing this law in Albany to get rid of these folks because I think some nature lovers.
Yeah, somebody bought the land.
Some serious Scott lookalikes up in Albany had the same perspective that, you know, nature, yes, humans who are poor, no.
And there was a very large, unspoken but implied situation there that they could go elsewhere, which of course was found to be unconstitutional under ICOR. No one is forced to leave.
Right, well, they claimed that there were other social services in Berkeley that they go to.
Berkeley,
but one of the main findings that the Albany courts acknowledged, and which was extensive testimony was presented in that case, was there were no essentially adequate services in Albany. In fact, there were no services at all.
A special trailer, I think, for a while. Yeah.
And the significance of that in Santa Cruz is there's not adequate services in Santa Cruz. In fact, the services were sending people to Camp Paradise.
And yet, somehow, mysteriously, Commissioner Joseph, he held negatively on the three... Let me briefly go through the six prongs before we get ahead of ourselves here. I found a little treatise that explains them the least mysteriously to lay people. This is out of the People versus Pepper case.
And it is available through HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Show up at a meeting 8:30 Wednesday morning at Baker Square and get your own copy of The Necessity Defense.
Oh, I'll have to make this available to you for copies. But this, to justify an instruction on the defense of necessity, there must be evidence sufficient to establish that defendant violated the law, number one, to prevent a significant evil, and just to explain that in ICORN, that was found to be lack of sleep, which is a very basic physiological need, which was a great precedent for
ICORN,
homeless people.
A town in Santa Ana, a town in Southern California, a man named James ICORN was...
When we mention ICORN, that's a very seminal case
convicted
for homeless people.
For a camping violation, the case was turned down because they did not allow him to use the necessity defense. The court, in essence, ruled, you have to let him use the necessity defense, therefore the conviction is thrown out. And I don't think they retried him. I'm not aware that they ever retried him.
No, they didn't. And number two, with no adequate alternatives. Number three, without creating a greater danger than the one avoided. Four, with a good faith belief in necessity. Objective belief in necessity. Five, with such a belief being objectively reasonable, and six, under circumstances in which he or she did not substantially contribute to the emergency. Now, what we're fighting locally in the Camp Paradise appeal is Commissioner Joseph decided against us on the first three prongs.
Before we do that, let's go into some of those prongs in a little bit more detail, because I'd like people to have a sense of what this is about in case, as individuals, they want to request the necessity defense when they show up in court. And I'm also going to leave copies of this at the Santa Cruz Service Corps for them to distribute. You don't have to actually come to the dreaded HUF meetings, 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday
free
at
coffee.
1107 Ocean, where you will get free coffee. But you can actually just show up at the Santa Cruz Service Corps until they dump everybody out of there, because they're going to demolish that building probably within a month or two.
Yeah?
That's what I hear. I mean, it's supposed to have a family shelter. They're going to do the whole thing.
Oh, I know. They're launching it so quickly.
Maybe not. I could be wrong. I had heard it was only until May. Then I heard it was until June. I'm not sure when it is. Mm. But anyway, do you know the address down there? I don't know the actual address.
745 River Street.
745 River Street is where you can get a copy of this, hopefully by tomorrow.
On the corner of Coral and River.
Coral and River.
Right on the corner.
Right a block away from the meeting of River Street and Highway 1 at the Santa Cruz Service Corps headquarters. I think it's, 9 to 5 or 8 to...
Whenever they get there.
Whenever they get there, come at midday to be sure.
Yeah.
This, you can also get it at the law library. You can get it from the guy in the strange vehicle with all the bumper stickers and the big beard. That's me. And before we go any further, here's a quick phone call. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, how's it going, Robert?
Good, who's this?
Hey, I've been brainstorming lately, and I came up with the idea that perhaps to put some advancement and forward momentum to the shelters. If somebody's been there for, say, 3 months, after 3 months, if you choose to stay there, you can pay a little.
Mm-hmm. Have you actually been to the shelter and examined what the processes are there? Because there is no shelter for people in the summer except the floors of churches, and those are usually all taken up with disabled people. There are 39 spaces.
Well, even in those cases, there's a pattern of...
Are you talking about River Street, like transitional shelters, or are you talking about emergency shelters?
Well, there's a tendency for them to bog people down. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed that.
So you think that just sort of charging them a fee would be a good idea, eh?
Yes, perhaps. There could be a prearranged, I mean, there's people that are homeless that are working, and they could be getting themselves a little ahead, and that's a motivator, in a way.
Uh-huh.
It makes a person feel good to pay some bills.
Uh-huh.
It makes, you know what I mean? If you have something to show, I've been staying here for the last 5 months, if you have something to show, that actually increases a person's
Carl, I think that's required, for example, in a community house. I think you have to pay 30% of your income at least or some such thing. And, in other places, I mean, you're often in situations where people are in the middle of domestic abuse, and there aren't other places. There's the River Street shelter where you got to be on a waiting list, and then there's, you know, the floor of a church where you, in essence, if you're one of the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people who isn't a part of a small group that really is disabled and older, you're not going to get in there anyway.
Quick aside in closing, or maybe a whole other can of worms.
Yeah.
But, That's going to bring up another ugly issue that's been stagnant between you and me for a while.
Uh-oh.
Is the policing the homeless of the police, policing the homeless of and by the homeless.
Uh-huh.
And I heard a couple of your callers, I psychic the question, and he answered it. Wiley Drake.
Uh-huh.
And he took it to task, and that shows that yes, he is probably an individual that has been slighted by homeless per se, because they're past that point. They've already expired. It's become a lifestyle.
Let me interrupt you a minute, because I'm not quite sure I understand. Wiley is a conservative Baptist minister who
runs. But he's taking people to task.
Who does take people to task. I mean, he takes everybody to task. He believes in sin and hell and brimstone and everything else.
And being openly.
Right, as well as he's also a very decent fellow who takes people into his church, 250 homeless people every night. Illegally,
and
I might add.
Now, he's probably an individual who has been in a situation where somebody has slapped him in the face for the troubles that he has
been
through.
Oh, he's been punched. No question. In fact, he was punched last month.
There's your point. And now here's one of my challenges.
So have I. So have you, probably.
Using your medium as a challenge, just in closing, to present a definition to what is the element that has subterfuged the homeless environment.
Not clear I understand.
What element
subterfuged?
There is an element that has subterfuged.
Can you use another word? I'm not sure what you mean.
Subterfuge, gone beneath and existed under but not separate of the original component, subterfuge. Below.
Pretend you're talking to a 5-year-old. What do you
below? The homeless population, there is individuals who have expired as homeless. They're no longer, it's become a lifestyle.
Oh, you're saying that there's some people who are phony homeless people who are just sort of hanging around, relying on all the wonderful social services.
That's got to be careful with the words in the mouth there, but
I'm just trying to understand what you're saying.
It's subterfuging the homeless. I don't know, there's a caller out there that can maybe explain it better.
Okay, well, maybe we should wait.
Subterfuging in the homeless environment.
Well, they better not be centrifuging them, or I'm going to send them
to
space.
The drifters that the homeless drive off, and they're drifters for that reason, is because they're
not legitimate homeless people.
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Okay.
Being homeless without a house, they've already accepted that whole boo hoo wah. They're probably even squatters. They might even have a place, but
right.
You know the thing is that they've torn asunder what was a way. I mean, they torn asunder and they bog people down. This element bogs people down and it creates a lot of crisis in the home.
You talking about drugs and alcohol?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking about individuals that use that as a means as well.
Okay.
They know that they're subject to drawing people's desires out, and those desires can therefore be exploited.
Well,
these are individuals that exploit homeless.
Well, let's see what other folks have to say.
I
want to
do that. Bye.
Fair enough. Yeah, I find that kind of hard to understand, but if anybody out there has any thoughts on what the last caller has said, please call in, 427-3772. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772, again, in case I said that too quickly, with Robert Norris and his associate Chris Fredrickson, or perhaps Chris Fredrickson and her associate Robert Norris, or perhaps either one or both. We're talking about the necessity defense, and the necessity defense is a defense you can use in camping cases. This was approved by the California Supreme Court, oop-de-doo, in the Eichhorn case. That's the case of James Eichhorn from Santa Ana, where they said, the judge said, you can't use the necessity defense because you could have gone and done something else, you didn't even need it. And in fact, he could use it, and it is usable, and anytime you have a camping ticket, you can use this defense. We're going to talk about it.
One thing I wanted to mention, we started talking about the summit workshop, and people used, once they got the elements of this defense, they didn't want to hear a whole lot more from the lawyers, which I don't personally understand myself at all, but if somebody gives me 2 hours to talk, I would like to take that 2 hours, but I guess I can kind of understand. What people used the time for was to tell their stories, and that was very valuable time. We had people from, actually, Nancy isn't one of the plaintiffs in the Ridley case, but
she knows about that.
She knows it. Yeah,
Dr. Nancy McCready and Santa Barbara. The Ridley Cooper cases involve cases that were using the necessity defense that were successful not only in the court. They were actually unsuccessful in the court level, but then successful at the appeals level, which is
Local appeals level. Unfortunately, they're
right,
not
the local in Santa Barbara.
They're not published, so we can't use them. But they're companion cases. They're wonderful cases because they decided down there that folks who had to leave their RVs, leave their dogs behind, and go into a mission to sleep and enter into religious services.
Forced indoctrination, the kind that Wiley Drake was talking about today,
right,
earlier on the air, actually.
Right, that those were not reasonable alternatives, and that therefore the necessity defense held, and their camping tickets were defeated. Mm-hmm. So those are very good cases for us to use, at least analogously. But those were some of the stories that were shared around the circle. People from Portland who were arrested for trespass used the necessity defense successfully up there. A few of the plaintiffs.
Trespass on public property or trespass on private property or?
I believe it was public property. I'm trying to remember. There were several of them. It was the Field of Dreams case.
Yes, actually,
Field
I have
that
here in the...
And I don't think I ever got any written material. They were going to fax me down some. I need to follow up on that. But there were some of those plaintiffs there. So it was very encouraging to hear these things, and people needed to talk about things. The downside, I just wanted to summarize, the downside was that is that all there is? I mean, we need a sword. This is a shield, and we haven't been that successful with it yet. We need particularly being the lawyers around the states, need to get together, which we are now doing. And thanks to you, Robert, I think that is certainly happening for me. Field of Dreams. Okay, it was public, and they were each represented by individual public defenders, and they were each using the necessity defense gotten off. But anyway, this stuff, because these aren't being published except for Eichhorn, after Eichhorn, I think that it's going to take a networking of lawyers talking about these things, sharing ideas. But the idea that we came away with after everybody got to share their stories was that the necessity defense is and can be potentially a very effective shield, but we need a sword of some kind to go with it. And what is that going to be? We need more.
Yeah, I heard some of the debate on a tape after. I wasn't able to actually be part of that seminar.
Am I going all over the place with this?
No,
stuff
you're
here?
Fine. You're fine. This is good. And I want to play that on the air. I think I will be playing it either next Sunday or possibly on Thursday if there's time. It's fairly long. It's about 45 minutes, maybe longer. Although it seems even longer. I've got all kinds of tapes. I don't know quite when they are from, but it really, not only got into the personal experiences of different campers and different homeless folks, but the experiences of different communities mm-hmm. in different cities, Portland, Seattle, Isla Vista, Santa Barbara, Sacramento, and the kinds of tactics they were fighting
right.
to more broadly establish the right to sleep for homeless people in their communities, or fight the attack on homeless people for the crime, quote-unquote, of sleeping.
Sadly, I was the only Santa Cruz resident there.
And I think there was Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver may have been on the outskirts.
Oh, that's right. They were there.
Yeah, they were there, but they had
not been in on the Camp Paradise stuff until the very end.
Right. They came at the very end, and then they were driven away.
But they were still very...
Officer Seeley.
Yes, they were. Thank you, Officer Seeley, one more time.
Wow. And I think, again, let's go back to the necessity defense and go over some of those prongs again, because I think we use the word necessity kind of, and people hear it, but let's go in again to the technical definition in California of what the necessity defense is and what elements you have to prove. And it's interesting to do this because I think it can be a kickoff for a broader discussion, and kind of we can go from area to area. The first element, can you read that first element again?
To prevent a significant evil.
And that, of course, is the key.
Yes.
The key to the necessity defense.
The key.
It's okay, and it stems from things like, it's okay to escape from jail if the guards are trying to kill you, right?
Correct.
And it
gets a little sticky because we do not have it codified. Therefore, I don't want to get into the pedantic thing here, but because we do not have it codified, it goes back to the common law, and you don't want to get into the fuzzy line between necessity and duress. Uh-huh. And some of the commentators talk about that.
Right, but the key element, the first element, is to prevent a significantly greater evil than would have happened
yes.
if you followed the law.
And for example, well, two things. One, ICORN has very conveniently defined a very compassionate bottom line for us homeless activists by saying that lack of sleep is a physiological need, and therefore to combat that. To find a place to sleep, to lie down and sleep, is a significant evil to be overcome. To have a place to sleep.
Right. No, you break the law because you need to sleep somewhere.
You need to sleep.
And if there are no legal places to go, then you have no choice, but you are avoiding the significant evil of illness. And actually, there also are other problems like the insecurity of... If you try to stay awake all night is preposterous,
yes.
of course, but that's the solution.
I was just going to contrast that with the absurdity of Commissioner Joseph's finding that even though we had testimony put on by our own, well, not put on by, but propounded and then testified to by our own police chief that homeless people are at night subjected to being assaulted 3 to 5 times more, likely to be assaulted 3 to 5 times more than the average citizen just walking the streets, and that safety issue is therefore a very dire problem. The safety issue compounded with the physiological need to sleep was not enough. He did not consider that enough.
Right, so the first element of the defense, and I think that we're going to go through these one by one, we were in Santa Cruz confronted with the fact that people in Santa Cruz, 1,000, 2,000 homeless people, need to sleep at night and need to sleep safely somewhere. And most of them don't. Most of them sleep where they can. They hide out. They sleep out. They get out, whatever they will. And some of them formed Camp Paradise. And Camp Paradise became an area where some people could go. You had to deal with, as I said, an authoritarian leadership, and that was a problem for
them. No one, to my knowledge, was ever turned away for a place to sleep at night. My personal experience, other people may be telling tall tales.
Some people were thrown out of there, and they were thrown away.
Yes, but at night, if strangers, travelers, people in domestic violence situations needed a place to sleep, to my knowledge, no one has ever denied a safe night's sleep.
And given that, so encampments form, of course, illegally in small numbers in different places hidden away. This was the first encampment in Santa Cruz that I'm aware of, other than protest encampments that were sort of short-lived, that formed and maintained itself as a, with a community support, and I've talked about this on the air. But for the purposes of the necessity defense, the first question that a judge would have to decide, or a jury, if this were a jury case, say, in a misdemeanor, it could be tried conceivably as a misdemeanor if they'd wanted to, but they chose to try it as an infraction. Always try to get them to try it as a misdemeanor, folks. It's always a good idea to do that, because then you get a jury.
You can get a jury.
And a public defender, both. Don't listen to referee Mulligan when he tells you you can't do it. Just simply disqualify him and move down the road. Anyway, the first prong of that is to prevent a significant evil. And as you've been saying, Chris, the significant evil is, in this case, A, lack of sleep, B, lack of security. I mean, there are other things, too, that you can consider there could be health problems and concerns that you would have. If you're in a community of people, needs can be met that are more likely to happen, and we saw this when the Coral Street Open Air Shelter was dissolved in 1995 by Rotkin and Kennedy of the City Council and Daryl Darling, now all the great champions of the homeless, one way or the other, if you listen to their press releases. They were dispersed. This area behind the Homeless Services Center, which had a couple hundred people at one time.
Which is now Page Smith, right?
It's now the Page Smith Community House, right, occupied by that area. There were a tent city were there, and it had its problems, many problems. There was it wasn't clean and sober, it wasn't nice and sweet, and there were different kind of little communities in it, but nobody died there until they dispersed it, and then people began to die. And the question is, obviously death is equally as another significant evil, and of course the question is, does an emergency exist? That question came up in the trial of the Camp Paradise 4, now the Camp Paradise 3, and so the first prong that Irwin ruled on, Joseph ruled on is his last name, Irwin is his first, Irwin Joseph ruled on, was that there was not a significant evil, that it hadn't been proved by a preponderance of the evidence that there was a significant evil that justified violating the law. What did he say about that? I mean, his arguments were so unpersuasive. I don't even remember if he referred specifically to that.
I believe, in spite of going back over the trial tapes, Paul Sanford pressed this issue at great length during the trial, and I'm now really understanding the significance of his arguments and finding this argument very brilliant. The argument of a continuing emergency. He kept pressing it during trial, and I think it's something that we're going to make great use of at appeal level, which I'm starting to concede is going to be probably nothing more than trying to educate local judges.
And possibly use the continuing emergency at the next trial.
Yes, that most
that
definitely. Because
you get a camping ticket out there, give a call to Chris Fredrickson at
465-9393.
465-9393, because while this case is running up to the inevitable, forgive me, fuck you by the judges who will support Commissioner Irwin Joseph in spite of Chris's good work, the next case is going to be an important one because it'll be a new case, and because we have the same emergencies we had last year, no increase whatsoever in shelter space for homeless people, probably an increase in the homeless population, and hopefully a better, more educated part of the community willing to fight these cases. Again, your number, Chris, is
465-9393.
465-9393. Now, I don't know, you're not really volunteering to fight every case to the max. You're willing to talk about the cases. What is the extent of your commitment in this?
I'm certainly willing to help people out in terms of advising them, and we need to be fairly picky at this point in terms of pressing good cases. But I'm certainly willing to advise people as to how to fight these cases. And I know that Mandy Hanks down at HRC is still willing to supply the letter saying that the shelters are not available, which we use at trial. It was a very valuable piece of evidence. Even though it didn't get us anywhere, it's still part of the no alternatives exist piece, and it's been getting camping tickets dismissed for years now, and she still has those and is more than willing to give them out. So there's advice available. So rather than let them run to warrant, don't do it. Just go in, and if you have to disqualify Mulligan, do it, and bring them up and shove them into Commissioner Joseph's face. $54 or $8 if you're, or 8 hours if you're guilty. But I believe that they can, most all of them are dismissible.
Yeah, so what we're saying now is we're talking, of course, about the elements of necessity defense, but I'm throwing in here, and this is important to those of you out there who have camping tickets you want to fight, give a call to Chris, and she can kind of advise you. Maybe at some time in the future, Chris, you may be throwing forums or seminars out at the Homeless Service Center.
Sure.
Giving a brief description to folks who want to fight them, how they can fight their camping tickets, because it's important to have those tools for your dignity, for your security, for your sanity, for the protection of your property and those you care about.
Well, silly cruising around having warrants is just not a good thing, not a good way to live for your anxiety level. And camping ticket warrants just aren't, you don't need them. I mean, they're easy enough to deal with.
One of the defenses you're going to be using is the necessity defense, which we're talking about. First prong of the six prongs of the necessity defense is, I camped to avoid a significant evil, which is lack of sleep, which is security. And there, of course, is an interesting concept in terms of why you don't just need the right to sleep. You need the right to sleep in a group of people who can protect each other, mm-hmm. such as was the case at Camp Paradise. And you can use Chief Belcher's report from 1999, which Chris is talking about, which we finally got him to unloose after many, many months of pressure through the Homeless Issues Task Force, which showed that 3 to 5 times, I made it more like 3 to 10 times, but yeah. Depends on how you do your stats.
I'm sure it was conservative if it came from him.
Yeah, you're more likely by 300 to 500% at least to be hit, assaulted if you are homeless. That's pretty serious stuff. I mean, if you had those kinds of odds, and somebody said, if you go out today, it's 300 to 500 times more likely that you'll be hit than if you might stay inside. You might decide not to go out based upon that stat. So the question of, is there a greater evil to be averted? And that sort of is a no-brainer, because it's been ruled by the California Supreme Court that lack of sleep is sufficient evil to require the necessity defense. And I think that they said really in the text of their decision that it was a sufficient evil to win on that prong. What's your reading of the ICORN decision there? That is simply not being able to sleep at night itself, when they criminalize all sleeping, is that sort of allows you to overturn a ticket based upon the fact that that's a significant evil that you have a right to violate a law to avoid?
Yes, the court went into the physiological need for sleep and the analogy of the would we want truck drivers on the road who hadn't had enough sleep, and of course we wouldn't.
Yeah, and so in other words, it's not just you can put on the defense, but you can win that prong of the defense just by the fact that you're not allowed to sleep. So you have to, you have to show that there are no reasonable places for you to sleep. Now, it's interesting. You don't have to show that you went to every conceivable place and dealt with every conceivable alternative. If it was common knowledge that there were no legal places for you to sleep that night, as it was the case in Santa Ana, as was the case in Albany, as was the case in Santa Barbara, if that is common actually in common knowledge, then you may not even need Mandy Hanks's paper from the Homeless Services Center, though I'm sure it'd be good to get it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the second prong?
That is the second prong.
Which is?
No adequate alternative.
And there it is. No adequate alternative. You couldn't go to a friend's house. Well, did you go to a friend's house? You don't have to prove that. I don't think it was necessary for any of the defendants in the Albany or Santa Barbara cases to say, I went to all my friends' houses first and asked them all. What do you think, Chris? Did that issue come up in the Camp Paradise trial? I don't think it came up. I don't think the prosecution said...
Well, we did use Mandy Hanks' letter to show that
did you go to friends' houses? Why didn't you sleep at Carl Wilson's house, for instance?
No, but there was a lot of testimony on it about the economics of why didn't you have a place to live. There's a great deal of testimony from the city attorney about delving into people's economic status. And I'm just looking at his comment to the second prong, which really just makes me furious every time I read it. His
Commissioner Joseph's comment.
Commissioner Joseph's comment in his opinion, it's not even a comment, it's his dicta in his opinion, as to the second prong, alternatives to Camp Paradise do exist, which they don't. I mean, we proved they didn't. They just don't appeal to the residents who have tasted a caring community.
Well, I asked Commissioner Joseph in my response to his opinion. I wrote a long response to this opinion back in December, and I wrote actually a somewhat shortened version of that for Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper, which you can sell, all you folks out there, if you want. And he didn't, I handed him this decision, and he handed it back to me in court. I mean, 5 months after I'd given him all my response to his decision, he handed me back my commentary and thanked me. But he had no particular, of course, I should have said to him and didn't, and because he was on the bench at the time, and I felt I would have been held in contempt of court or possibly embarrassed myself in front of all my friends. What significant alternatives were there?
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner Joseph, please, can you just tell me that right now so I can know? And, of course, anyone should ask him that. Anyone who sees him on the street should ask him, what were the alternatives, please, sir, that you can give?
That sent ripples through the courtroom when you read this aloud. That there were reasonable alternatives. Everybody was like, what? What are you talking about?
Of course, the reason he said that was because he had to say something.
He had to say something, exactly.
I mean, that's my
analysis. To find on that prong, he had to say something.
What's the third prong?
I don't know what he was thinking. A third prong. And this is the one that he, you know, very possibly could sit on. This is the without creating a greater danger than the one avoided, and this is the one he went on the environmental tear on. That we had chosen a campsite on a dangerous, ill-equipped, environmentally sensitive, flood-threatened place is not more persuasive than an alternative, and he knew that he had a lot of community support on that, because by that time they had Slope?
Right, the San Lorenzo River Restoration Project.
Yes, which they suddenly resurrected to fight Camp Paradise being on the riverbank, and a lot of people freaking out about endangered species, which we were actually down there protecting, nobody'd ever really thought about before. And everyone was up in arms about these almost trashy people being on this very sensitive area of the riverbank, which had been a heroin alley for how many years beforehand?
Yeah. Well,
there were,
I believe, legitimate arguments to be made that Camp Paradise was engaging in sort of city-building activities in an area that perhaps it shouldn't have been in.
Yes, it was not a good spot.
But the question, you know, I mean, there was a big generator there. There was gas that was presumably spilled there.
There were too many people. There was too much trash.
You know, there was a question of, you know, I mean, the porta-potta facilities were not the best. And when they were, of course, the city tried to do its best to stop porta-potta facilities.
The city kept taking them away every time we put them in.
At least two occasions, yeah. But the question, I mean, had they moved in and said, the generator in this circumstance is an environmental hazard, we're going to remove it, but not said, you don't have a right to camp here, because that would have been different. But they didn't do that. I mean, instead, they attacked these people in terms of their right to form an encampment. They were charged with established campsite, section 6.36010C of the Santa Cruz Municipal Code. They weren't charged with being environmental hazards. Actually, Templeton did get some tickets, but they were all dismissed.
They were thrown out.
They were bogus tickets, or they were really unpersuasive, or maybe they were thrown out for political reasons. I'm not entirely sure of everything there. But the third prong of this, which is, we've learned the first prong is to avoid a significant evil for the necessity defense. The second prong to prove is that there were no significant alternatives. You had to do what you had to do because you couldn't do anything else. You didn't have any other choices. And the third was that you didn't create a greater hazard.
Something greater, yeah.
Yeah, and the answer is, and this really wasn't explicitly argued by Joseph, as I can
see.
He kind of made these shots in passing, but he didn't say, you know, if you'd camped over in a safer area, because if he'd said that, of course, it would have been an invitation for people to find a safer place to camp. And of course, the reality is there are no legal places to camp in the city of Santa mm-hmm. Cruz, and Joseph is playing that game. He's not playing doing his job, which is respecting the rights of people under the law. He is trying to defend the law. He's acting in a way like a city attorney, it looks like to me, or somebody who's sort of subservient to the city council or those conservative elements that back this law,
mm-hmm.
the police department probably and the parks and rec department. What's the fourth element?
Fourth one is that you have a good faith belief in the necessity of, in other words, in the necessity of what you're having to do, to having to break the law.
And I've never quite understood what this is really about. What is it? Can you explain this element to me?
Well, I would imagine it's the subjective element, the defendant's subjective element in the necessity. It would be analogous, I suppose, to one's good faith belief in the self-defense.
So you have to you can't do what you're doing without believing in it. I'm not quite sure why the belief would be important. I'm trying to imagine where you had all the other elements of the defense, but you didn't have a belief in it. I mean, I'm not quite sure. But anyway, I mean, so I guess I sort of slide.
Well, there's usually, I mean, in these sorts of, in torts and in criminal law, there's usually a need to put on evidence to show both a defendant's subjective element and then an objective element. And the next one is an objective, that the defendant's was, you know, the ordinary reasonable person element, the objectively reasonable belief. So I suppose this is the companion belief.
Sounds like some sort of legal technicality almost, but I guess you're saying you have to believe that you had to do this. So you, from your point of view, it wasn't somebody else's belief, it was your belief.
Well, it wasn't like something from outer space, that all of a sudden these 60 people just thought this was a good idea. I mean, that with the surrounding circumstances and with, you know, with all the other testimony that the streets weren't safe and that we needed to sleep, and
but that's,
you know,
element four, you had to believe it. The
right.
Element five was this belief had to be reasonable. It couldn't just be a fantasy.
Objectively reasonable, that looking in on these elements, that this was a reasonable thing to do.
And the sixth is, of course, the element that you couldn't have done something that created the emergency.